for joining me today. This is a little bit, for those of you who are watching live as the live stream, this is a little bit earlier than normal, and I appreciate you joining me earlier. Today, I am excited to have my friend Jamie with me, and we're going to get to Jamie in just a second, but first, I do want to let you know that this is Hashtag No Limits, and I am your host, Shelley Kino, and Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be, and I believe that to be true, and that there is not a better, more beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. A quick science lesson for those who don't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into cells and then reforms as the butterfly. That's not enough struggle, though. It has to continue to struggle to fight in order for its wings to be strong enough once it gets out of the cocoon to take it everywhere that it wants to go and to be that beautiful creature that we see. I really believe that every one of us throughout our entire lives are really caterpillars all the time, always changing into butterflies. We get new research. And that is something that Jamie is going to talk to us about today. She is a speech language pathologist, and she recently, by that I mean like in the last 3-ish, 4 years, has kind of changed how she's done things. And she's going to explain that to us. Make sure if you are new to this channel that you like or subscribe so you don't ever miss an episode. And if you would please put in the chat hashtag live and where you're from, or hashtag replay and where you're from. All right, business stuff over. Jamie, hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? That was beautiful.
Oh, thank you. I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. So tell us about yourself and give us an introduction as to who you are and what brought you to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Jamie Birch. I am the owner and sole therapist in Inclusion Therapy Services. This is my 1-year anniversary of starting my company, which is really exciting. So what a way to celebrate.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. I have been a therapist for 8.5 years, and I've always been in private practice. And I came into this to support autistic youth, and it was in listening more to the autistic community that I realized, wow, so much of what I was taught in grad school and so much of what I was practicing was not considered best practice, when listening to the autistic community. And it was kind of a shock to the system, honestly, yep. And very humbling. I was like, oh my gosh, if this is the community that I'm supporting, that's absolutely who I should be listening to. They should be my driving force in how I support other minds like theirs. And so it was a lot of unlearning and relearning in listening to this community. And now I solely support autistic youth and their teams and their families, and specialize in Gestalt Language Processing, which we can talk about in a little bit, and AAC. And it is something like this whole, being a business owner and being able to solely support this community, I've always kind of felt like a dream. And it really took unlearning, and again, being very humbled to actually follow that dream and realize that there was such a huge need there. So yeah, that's just a little bit about me.
Awesome. So I do just want to make a little caveat here, because I don't want people to think that all undergrad education is horrible.
Right. Oh yeah.
What Jamie did with her degree was she very niched down into a very specific community, a very specific population. But when they are at undergrads training you to do whatever it is, they are training you for a whole lot of things.
Yeah.
So, and as I mentioned in the intro, new research is popping up all the time. And
oh, yeah.
Gestalt, I never say it correctly. Language processing is something that has been known a very mm-hmm. little a bit about for a very long time. Mm-hmm. But in the last like 5 to 10 years, or maybe not even that long, there's been a lot more research produced and a lot more known about Gestalt language processors, how it works, and how those of us around those processors need to speak as well. And even mm-hmm. from starting your practice until where you are, you had to change. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And because I think because even in graduate school, you know, it's still so limiting. It's like, here's 2 years where you need to be able to learn how to support literally from birth until death. You know, I can help. I could help with lactation all the way to, like, you know, stroke and dementia. And so I'm like, that's so, and everything in between and all different neurotypes. And 2 years really is, I mean, that's a lot to try to fit in there. And so, yeah, it's not necessarily fault to any program. And I love where I went to school. But yeah, that's a lot of information. And so, yeah, the constant learning and a lot of what I was learning actually isn't even through research. I mean, in autistic teens, and letting their past experiences drive future experiences for other kids.
Yeah, that's awesome. excuse me, sorry. So when I began special education teaching 100 years ago, I think, like I said, it was maybe mentioned. Can you explain mm-hmm. more what it is and how people process that way, what that kind of looks like for them?
Yeah, I think it's helpful to start with, there's a name for how another way of processing language, which is how I process language, which was analytical language processing. And that looks like what people are more familiar with. We start with single words like mama, mom, and then we go to two word utterances, three, four sentences, paragraphs. And, you know, that's what people are most familiar with. And that's called analytical language processing. And so what, you know, we've been treating all of our clients as analytical language processors, only to be informed that majority of the autistic community are Gestalt language processors. And that looks like starting with big chunks of language and then having it to be broken down to the single words. And then they can start doing single words, two word utterances, three, four, five, and building novel utterances. But initially, everything that child is saying is taken from somebody else, oftentimes media and songs. And so we've had kids who will be, you know, singing songs or, you know, scripting from Disney movies. You know, that's a really common one because they crave that rich intonation, which is in music and which is in Disney princesses who sound like this. And so that's my second dream.
That was awesome. You could be a Disney princess.
Thank you so much. That's the best compliment I've ever received. And they crave that rich intonation. And so they take it and they use it. And so that's where kids might say, like, to infinity and beyond. And they don't actually mean, hey, I want to watch Toy Story. They might be saying, you know, I want to go. I'm ready to go play. And they take those scripts and they try to apply them into everyday life. And then there's multiple stages to this Gestalt language processing. So that would be the first stage. The second stage is then realizing, oh, wait, I can change a word or two to make it mean more of what I want. And so a kid who might have said to infinity and beyond, maybe now is starting to say to the park and beyond, to grandma's and beyond. And he's starting to realize, oh, wait, I can mix and match these words that I have to be more specific and maybe to be more functional. And then they go down to single words. And so it's, if you're not familiar with it, it can be very confusing. You know, you hear kids scripting from movies and songs all the time, and then they're not able to answer questions. And that's a really, you know, common characteristic for these Gestalt language processors. And so it would be so helpful for more and more people to understand this different way of learning and processing language in the world so that we can better support these kids. And it's not just the speech therapists to understand them, but, you know, sometimes it's helpful that nurses and doctors understand them, because, you know, you might have a little kid who just says, like, ow, Peppa, my belly hurts. And they're, you know, scripting from Peppa Pig saying that their belly hurts, but really that's their only script to say that something doesn't feel right. And in fact, it's not their belly, it's their head or their arm or their toe. And so trying to be a detective to figure out, well, how are they using this script and what can it really mean? It's important for, I mean, really across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. And educators, I would think, you know, because outside of parents, I think educators spend the most time with children, especially from the ages of like 3 to 18. And so that was something that, you know, again, 100 years ago when I started teaching, was not really talked about and not really taught about either. And so for the people on the Gestalt Language Processors team, what do you say to them? How can we help our different processors communicate with us and us with them?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So a big part of what I do is trying to support teams, and that is parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles, but also the teachers. You know, it's great if the school SLP has knowledge, but that's not enough because they're only with them this much of their week. And so ensuring that educators and the aides in the classroom are aware. And so how to support them really depends on what stage of language development that they're in. And so there are four main stages of Gestalt language development, and then there's five and six that pretty much just work on grammar. And I would take care of that, or the speech therapist would. I think the main thing is that to not, you know, disregard those scripts. All of those Gestalts are purposeful. And so if a child is doing a lot of sing-songy or even rich intonation, but no clear words. And so sometimes that'll sound like
I'm not sure if she froze.
Or they're, can you hear me?
Yeah, you back? Froze for a second, or at least you froze on my computer. I don't know if it froze for anybody else.
I think the biggest thing is, no matter how a child's trying to communicate, songs, unintelligible speech with rich intonation, or scripting from movies, all of it's purposeful. And to the child, they are communicating functionally. You know, they understand what they're trying to communicate, and it is purposeful. And so I think the biggest thing is understanding that it's purposeful and honoring that. And so even if I have no idea what the child in front of me is trying to communicate, I know that they are communicating. And so let's say, you know, we're playing trains and he goes, "Whoa, Thomas, you know, slow down." Even if his train's not slowing down and I'm not quite sure if he wants the train to slow down, I might just go, "Whoa, Thomas, slow down." And I'll repeat it back to him. I would say 9 times out of 10, when I repeat a Gestalt back to a child, they give me what we call like bingo eye contact. They'll look at me like, "Whoa, she got me." Like, even though I have no idea, you know, sometimes it's more obscure than that. And so it'll be like, "Da, da, 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 a hamburger." And it'll sound like fast forwarding, and then say a hamburger. And I'll go, "A hamburger." And, you know, sometimes I'll get bingo eye contact, or I'll go, they'll go, "Okay, I'm back." And so that honoring that form of communication, and then modeling what it is you think they're trying to communicate. And so I have a little boy who would always ask, like, "Do you want French fries?" And that was his way of actually saying, like, "I'm hungry, I want a snack." Because he's taking what someone's asked him before. His mom has asked him before, "Do you want French fries?" And so he uses exactly what was said to try to get a snack. And so when he would say, "Do you want French fries?" I would say, "Oh, French fries?" And he would look at me and go, "Yes." And I'd say, "Oh," he keeps freezing. I'm modeling what would have been more maybe functional or easier to, you know, try to figure out what it meant in that time. And so honoring those Gestalts and then modeling what that child can potentially use next time is the best thing that you can do.
That's
which is
awesome.
Kind of the opposite of what a lot of people were taught.
So, yeah, I know there's been so many different things than even the speech pathologists that I work with were taught. And then more research came out and it was like, "Oh, no, don't do that anymore. Do this." And right. So it does take a lot of, and that is why, at least in the state of Illinois, as educators, we have to have continuing education, because we understood, I shouldn't say we, the legislators understood that there would be new research and there would be new information. And in order to stay as fresh as possible, we would need to learn and continue learning. Because as we mentioned at the beginning, you know, when we're taught, and I don't know how this works in other fields, but as educators, when we're taught so broad and so much. And then we kind of niche down into certain specific areas. And then that's where we can get that extra learning and continuing education for our licenses, because we focus on the specific things that really help us in our classrooms or in our therapy rooms. I so appreciate you giving all of those suggestions, because anybody who's watching, if they're working with, not even working with, if they're interacting with kids at church, kids in their community, even adults, because there might be some adults, correct, that would still be processing in that way. And you might, you know, think, well, what are they, why are they talking to me that way? And we need to have that understanding of they're processing different. Mm-hmm. It's okay. I'm going to try to help. So I'm going to listen. I'm going to repeat back what they said as best that I can. Mm-hmm. I will, you know, randomly try to figure out basically what they're meaning and give them a better, you know, here, you might want to say this. And then, yeah, just that neuroaffirming, you know, it's so important, I think, because we have so many situations where we just assume we know what anybody is thinking. It doesn't have to be someone who processes the same or different as us. We use so much of the same language, but it has different meanings to each of us. And then when you add in, they are using that sing-songy, that scripted, you know, that's just, that is a big difference, like you said, for the majority of people. And to just try to just go, you know what, I don't understand what you're saying, but I'm going to try. Mm-hmm. Rather than just be like, why are you talking like that?
Right.
You know?
And I have so many people who, you know, let's say we're scripting from Winnie the Pooh. And, you know, so often, including myself years ago, would be like, we're not talking about Winnie the Pooh right now. And I'm like, now looking back, I'm like, here I am shutting down. You know, this is a kid who has communicative difficulty, and his right. communicative attempt was just shut down by the person who's supposed to be, you know, supporting that communication. But because we just didn't know, and that there was a lot of guilt attached to that. And I think I know I see that a lot. The more that I continue to educate educators who have been doing this for 30 years or speech therapists who have been doing this longer than I have, there's always a layer of guilt, because once you realize, oh, this is the real deal, this, then you're thinking back on all of these kids that you've supported over all of the years that you've been doing this. And you think, oh my gosh, if I would have known this. And it's hard to let go of that. It's very hard to let go of that. It creeps up on me every once in a while, because I can think of kids that I saw for the whole 8 years that I was, you know, practicing at a different location. And I was like, if I would have known the first year that he was a Gestalt language processor, think of how far along that child would have been by now. But because I was supporting him, like, he produced language a whole different way, you know, he didn't make those gains. And here I was thinking he didn't make those gains because of him. And it really wasn't him. It was because I didn't understand him and how he was processing the world around him and language. So that's always hard to sit with.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's where some people have a hard time accepting that Gestalt language processing is real, which almost seems silly. But there are a lot of people who like think it's a hoax, it's made up, you know? And I'm like, oh my gosh, if you could just see the kids that I saw who were Gestalt language processors before I knew and after I knew, and the trajectory of their progress after I was able to support them in the way that they needed to be supported. It's like, that alone would like turn people, but that guilt, that deters people, honestly.
So when you're working with someone, and you said they go from big chunks down to the little components, and then they're able to make meaningful, more analytical processing, like the majority of the population, approximately how long? I mean, obviously it doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
Are we talking like 3 times a week? Is it really dependent upon, I mean, I'm sure it is, but how much dependent upon the individual is it?
I would say more so dependent on the team members than on the individual. And I say that for kids who are primarily non-speaking and primarily speaking, because, and like that to me, that's not the thing that makes their, you know, that trajectory move a little quicker. It's the people on the team. And that was one of the reasons that I started this company, was so that I could spend more time with the team, and more time with parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles and teachers and therapists. And because if they're with me one time a week, that's an hour a week. That is a very small percentage of that child's week. And so, and that's what I was realizing. I was like, unless I can help everybody on his team or her team support that language, you know, then we're never going to make it through the stages, you know? And so I spend a lot of time educating parents and everybody else. And that's what I feel like has moved kids along so much faster. So I have kids that when I started seeing them, they were in stage one and they didn't really even have a lot of gestalts to start with. You know, they were only saying three or four things. And now some of those same kids are already into stage four, where they're producing completely novel utterances. They're not taking it from anywhere else. It's all completely novel. And so that has been really amazing. But I also don't want to put it all on parents and loved ones. So, but making sure those supports are in place across environments has been the most helpful. And then the other part that can delay it is whether or not, like, if a child needs an AAC device, how quickly can we get the AAC device? And so it is definitely, I can't say like stage one lasts 6 months. You know, there's no, there's no set timeline. It's been really different for all of my kids. But the amount of support that they're getting at home, I can say pretty much consistently affects how quickly they move through, more so than how often they're seeing me. If a kid sees me once every other week, but their parents are all in and their teacher's like, absolutely, give me everything. And then I'm trying to like make supports for the teacher, so I'm not adding yet another thing for that teacher to do, because I'd never want to just put more work on others. But if I can do that and I can get the team on board, then I do see us go through those stages a little bit quicker, because that's what we need. We need support and people who understand us to help get us to where we need to go.
Yeah. So I want to make sure, because this is a shortened edition today. So I do have your Facebook profile scrolling across the bottom, and then also your Instagram. So people can find you at Instagram and Facebook. Basically, just type in inclusion SLP on either platform and it'll pull you up, do you think?
Yes, it should.
Okay. And then how do you work with people? Does it all have to be in person? Can you do virtual?
I'm tainted by virtual. I have flashbacks of 2020 and 2021. I personally, I know people who do it. I know that they're able to. I like to be in person. So I only see people in person. And part of what I like about that is that everyone on my caseload is autistic, but also they have different sensory needs. And so much of what I do is movement. Language and movement go together. Regulation and communication go together. So ensuring that the child is regulated, I never would expect someone to like sit and attend to me the way you're attending to me and I'm attending to you. The expectation is that we move and we play and it's completely child-led. And for me, again, teletherapy is not my strong suit. And I know that about myself because I am a hands-on mover. I've got an ADHD brain that needs to move and all kinds of things as well. And so being able to be there, understand how that child, you know, processes sensory information and help co-regulate throughout that session is so, so key to me. Because when I was in the past doing teletherapy during COVID times, which I don't want to talk about, honestly, when I was
not
doing
many people
that,
do.
Yeah. Oh gosh. When I was doing that, what was really hard is maintaining any kind of attention because I couldn't be there to help co-regulate. And I didn't want to spend the whole session explaining co-regulation and like, oh, actually he does need to move in order to attend. And I just wanted to take that piece out of it. And so I'm constantly moving. I'm a human jungle gym. We are jumping, we are running, we are requesting squeezes, and I'm helping to help them know that they can advocate for those sensory needs. And that co-regulation piece and that understanding of sensory processing differences is such a huge part of supporting the neurodivergent community that I felt like I couldn't do that with exceptional care this way. And so, I thought if I want to be able to provide exceptional services, which is what I want to do for this population, then I thought I have to do it in person. Plus I love it. the energy that I get from the kids, I'm like, it's better than coffee. And that says a lot because I love coffee. I do in person. Again, more power to the people who can do that via teletherapy. It's more exhausting to me. It didn't feel like I could do all the things that I needed to do. I felt like the quality wasn't as good for me. Other therapists may have mastered that and great for them, but it's not my cup of tea.
Sure. Thank you for that. Do you have any advice, since obviously you are only in person, that means you're only able to cover a certain proximity, so you couldn't be all around the country. Do you have any advice for a family who thinks they may have a Gestalt language processor in their midst and they want to find a therapist who is like you? Are there certain certifications or criteria that they should be looking for?
Yeah. So there is a website, Meaningful Speech, and she has a registry of Gestalt language processing, like trained clinicians. Those are the ones that are trained through her. And it's really one of maybe two like really in-depth trainings. And her name, I believe, is Alexandra Zakos. And she has it where you can search, the globe and click on your location and see who's nearest to you. And that is really, really awesome. And then the other thing that I would do if you're clicking on that and you can't find someone near you or someone near you is out of your price range, doesn't take your insurance, is no longer accepting clients. The other thing that you can do is ask for a consultation. And so there are some families that I don't see them for weekly therapy or biweekly therapy, but I do consult with them and I help support their speech therapist. Let's say that speech therapist isn't trained. Let's say they can't afford the training. Their boss won't pay for the training, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. I can come in. This is something I can do virtually. I can come in virtually. And I will support the parent. I will support the speech therapist. I will support the teacher and all of the individuals in that child's life, all the team members from afar. I can't provide therapy, especially because potentially these people are out of state. So I don't provide therapy, but I do give, the team members, here are all the tools. I can look at language samples and be like, oh yeah, it does maybe look like this child's more in stage two. So this is what we need to do to support their language in this stage. In stage three, this is what we need to do to support them. And I can take that off of the treating therapist's hands and, help guide parents really, because parents want guidance and they have the power of the internet now. And so I have more and more parents coming to me being like, why doesn't my speech therapist know this? I'm like, listen, I'm defensive of them. I was in the same boat a couple of years ago. It's not their fault. Right. I was like, but you know what? I was like, this is what you can do. But the internet can be an amazing tool for that in finding community and in finding people, professionals that aren't in your area that can still support you. And that's really, really awesome. I don't always love social media. I love that aspect of social media because it has given parents and professionals who want to be affirming to this neurodivergent group. It's given us a community of people. If you don't have that community locally, you can find it out there. And I think that is super important.
Yeah, absolutely. I so often hear families throughout my career and today say they feel like they're on an island. They feel like nobody understands them. They don't know who to turn to talk to about their experiences, or they don't know what to ask because they don't know what's coming. And so to have a support group of any kind is tremendously helpful. We have a few more minutes. I want to maybe clarify a few things.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Is it only people who are autistic that will speak this way or that process language this way?
No, and that's a very good question. So I would say majority of autistic individuals are Gestalt language processors, but you don't have to be autistic to be a Gestalt language processor. I have seen in the past neurotypical individuals who are Gestalt language processors. I will say they moved through the stages, boom, 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 boom. I felt like really quickly to where we were producing novel utterances very, very fast. But yeah, it can be anybody. And I would venture to guess it's more common. I don't know what the statistics are, and I don't know how accurate the statistics can be because we have more and more adults who are realizing that they're autistic and getting that diagnosis in adulthood. And there are also, you know, autistic individuals who are Gestalt language processors who never received therapy services. Just because you are autistic, just because you are a Gestalt language processor doesn't necessarily mean that's not like a, oh, instant, you need to go get speech therapy. You know, everyone moves through the stages at different times. I have kids who pick up almost solely on conversational gestalts. And so, you know, when we're coming into a room and she's going to sit down, she might say, okay, everybody take your seats. And she's scripting from her teacher and from her parents. You know, anytime she's going in the car, she'll say, it's time to buckle up. And she says it exactly like her mom. And so I have kids who take gestalts from, you know, their environment and their community and their parents and their teachers. And it's a little trickier to see that they're a Gestalt language processor, but oftentimes those kids will go through stages a little bit quicker. And then I have kids who, you know, were only singing two songs. And so I feel like even within Gestalt language processing, there's a spectrum. And I think more and more we're realizing there's a spectrum with a lot of things. And it's not so black and white. So even if I said, oh, she's a Gestalt language processor, you wouldn't instantly know what her language looks like. Because we don't know where she's getting those gestalts from. We don't know if they're intelligible or not intelligible. We don't know if she's primarily speaking or non-speaking. We don't know if they're, you know, mostly song scripts or conversational. I mean, there's still so many elements, and then what stage she's in. So there's a spectrum there, but I think it's important to note that just because someone is autistic or Gestalt language processor doesn't necessarily mean they need speech services.
Thank you. And you answered the second clarification, which I was going to say, is every person who has autism also considered a Gestalt language processor? And you've already said that no, that the majority are, mm-hmm. but not every single person that is diagnosed with autism. So I appreciate that. And I know that there is so much more that we
could talk about.
And you and I have.
Right. Yeah. Which I appreciate. I love it.
Yes. But just again, for those who are, you know, look Jamie up. So it's, again, I'm going to pop up her website. It's inclusiontherapyservices.com. She is in the Metro St. Louis, Missouri area. Mm-hmm. But if you are not in her vicinity, she can be a consult for you. She can give you some suggestions. She also has a few social media pages that you can find her on. She's on Instagram and Facebook. And she, as you can tell, is just a delight to be around. And she is incredibly passionate about what she is doing. And I have seen, she and I have worked on a few. We're surprisingly local to each other. And it was very interesting how we found each other. And we're like 20 minutes apart logistically. So it was very crazy. But so she and I have consulted on a couple of cases before, and she's amazing. So if you are in the St. Louis Metro East area, and you are looking for a inclusion therapist, inclusion speech language therapist, sorry, had to throw that extra little delineation in there. I suggest reaching out to Jamie, and if she can't help you, she probably knows other people in the area that she can guide you towards. And I know Jamie will do what she can to help you, even if her waiting list is immense. Because that's just how she is. And so, Jamie, I want to just, you've got a couple more minutes. I know you see, she's so busy that she's squeezing me in between therapy sessions. And so I know you have another therapy session that you have to get to, but I want to give you the opportunity before we go to share anything, say anything that, you thought, oh, I really want to say this on the podcast today. That now is your chance.
Yeah. And thank you so much for the kind words. It was far too kind, but I'll take it. Thank you. Because Shelly's also awesome. Like, oh, I love working with amazing IEP advocates. It makes all of the difference for these families. So I just I really appreciate that. Something else that I would love to be able to add is I also provide professional development. And so I do go into school settings, doctor offices. I'm actually doing one, I think, at a library soon, which is where I'm at, because, you know, this is important. Being able to support the autistic community doesn't just happen in schools. And it's not just for autistic youth. These children grow up to be autistic adults. And so understanding how to support the autistic community as a whole, in my opinion, is helpful for every business, community members, law enforcement. It's not just happening in a bubble. And I think sometimes we like to think like we need to teach our teachers. And I'm like, we can only teach her. Like, I want to teach the teachers, but it doesn't stop with them, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I do provide professional development about neurodiversity affirming care as a whole. And that's looking at, you know, how can we best support this community? And majority of that information, all of it was run by the autistic community, individuals in that community, but majority of it is coming from the autistic community. This is what we want. This is what we need. And it goes over regulation and communication, AAC, terminology, the words that we use, the words that we think about this community drive our actions. And so we can look at the same child and observe the same thing, but the terminology that I use versus the terminology that someone else is using, that will guide the action that goes on with that child. And that's huge. It's huge. And so if anybody's in need of professional development and how to best support this community, not just with language, but just with affirming care and strengths-based care, I am always happy to support them. That is something that I do heavily in the area, but also virtually. I did one in Washington State. That's something that I'm always able to offer. And I love being able to do, because that is how we can get the information out to the masses. And that's how I feel like we see more of a difference to make the world and communities truly inclusive. So I love being able to do that.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because I know that is something that you do. And I forgot to bring that up myself.
And, oh, you're fine.
Yeah. I mean, the fact when you mentioned, you know, police forces, fire departments, you know, the emergency response teams, there's somebody I want to introduce you to because you need to do more things because you're not busy enough.
No, I love it. Give it to me.
I just think because he is a former police officer, he was on and he does trainings for police departments now on people with autism. And he obviously talks about the scripting and the echolalia and that there's one thing that I need to define. We have said this acronym the whole episode, AAC. But we never defined what that means.
So augmentative and alternative communication. And AAC can be anything. Oftentimes people think of it as an iPad with an app on it to be able to, you know, press a button and it's a speech generating device and it will communicate. But AAC can be anything. We all use it. Written language, emails, you know, my kids know this one, like, come here, you know, they're quick to know that one, or like, you know, I'm constantly giving, just wait. Yes, I'm like, come on, mommy's busy. So anything that isn't spoken out of our mouth, that some, any kind of communication that's not mouth words is considered AAC, augmentative and alternative communication. And it is something that, I love being able to give my clients, and it's something that I use both high tech and low tech. So sometimes you may see, you know, at inclusive playgrounds, there's these big boards that say like stop, go, slide, swing, and they have all these pictures. That's AAC. I do this all the time where I just say it and I don't explain it. So thank you for bringing that up, because I hate when I do that and I did it again.
Well, and I was doing the same thing. And I, that's part of, as an IEP coach that, you know, I am training myself to do is not to use the acronyms, or if you use the acronyms, make sure you explain the acronyms. And I, you know, I said AAC myself a few times. So I just wanted to make sure that we, and I've had people on other episodes, but in case there's somebody watching today that had never heard that before, I wanted to make sure that we did that. Well, Jamie, thank you. I mean, you're such a joy. You're such a delight. I love being around you. I love collaborating with you. I love introducing you to people for you to share your energy with them and your knowledge with them and seeing people's perspectives change about Gestalt language processors, because that's so much about what this show is about. You know, hashtag no limits, just trying to change that perspective to see how we can help people shatter those limits that we have on ourselves, we apply on others. Because as you said, how we think is how our actions are going to follow. Mm-hmm. And so we need to make sure that we're thinking inclusively and we're thinking up-to-date knowledge, community knowledge. And it's just, it's so important. And I so appreciate you and everything you're doing and for squeezing in time today to come on and be my guest. And, again, make sure that you reach out to her, inclusiontherapyservices.com. If she isn't in your area, she can guide you to that website, which I did put in the comment section, meaningfulspeech.com. And so you can go to that website and look for someone in your area who does similar things to what Jamie does. You won't find another. She's a very, very unique and special, but you might find someone similar. So thank you, Jamie. Thank you, everyone who joined today and who will watch in the replay or listen on the podcast. Have a great day, everybody.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.